Hey guys, welcome to another week of Autastic, your comedian's guide to autism. I'm one of your hosts, Kirk Smith, and here's always my co-host,
Graham K. How you doing, everybody? You can't answer, but you know, I hope you're great.
How you doing, buddy? How's it going out in beautiful New York City?
It's great. It's a beautiful. It's finally beautiful here. It was really crappy, it's global warming is happening. One day it was winter, and then we had 3 hours of spring in the morning, and then it was full on summer, and it's been summer all week.
Nice.
It's beautiful. New York in the spring is awesome. And big stuff's happening. I did laundry today. So
nice. New York in the spring. Yeah. Always the smell of vomit and urine in the streets. I love it. Back to normal.
Okay, that's not true. Not true. It actually rains here, so it washes stuff away.
That's true. That's actually true.
Unlike where you live.
I live in a desert. It's true. A lot less rain.
You know what I found out? Somebody told me about LA, why there's such bad drivers.
I'm listening. What do you got?
LA, when it rains, is because it never rains, so all the oil just gets activated by the water.
That's true. It's very dangerous.
Droplets.
That's true.
Yes.
It's very dangerous.
It only rains, so the oil stays there and builds up. Whereas everywhere else, it rains enough that it gets washed away.
That's true.
So they're basically like driving on black ice, and everyone's drunk because they drive everywhere. At night.
Most dangerous is motorcycles during the first rain. It washes up all that little grime and grease and everything else. Yeah, you gotta be careful, really careful.
This is the comedian's guide to driving.
Drunk.
And autism. And autism. We are not scientists. We also don't drink and drive or condone it.
That would be terrible.
But anyway, yeah.
Go ahead, say it. Go ahead, buddy.
Why don't you do it?
I feel like I'm talking over you so many times. Sorry. I was going to say we're two comedians who have loved ones with autism in our life. I have a severely autistic 19-year-old son. And tell us about your brother, Pete.
My brother, Pete, is 33 years old. He's doing pretty well. He's got a couple part-time jobs. I'm about to see him in a couple of days. Very excited.
Ah, that's great. That's great. You're going up to beautiful Canada, right? You've got that that charity gig you're doing up there. That should be great.
Yeah, I'm going up to Ottawa to perform at the Live, Work, Play banquet. And there's a wonderful organization up there. And I gave them a bio a couple months ago.
Sounds fancy.
And he asked me today if I had an updated bio, and I sadly said no. I have done nothing since February.
Well, nothing like no more movies. You're just in the number one movie in the country. I think that's not terrible.
But that was in the old bio. but yeah. So, yep, that's it. Things are good. Nothing crazy to report, you know. Ship is steady. I'm excited to see, you know, we're going to give them some meal plans and when I go up there and, you know, just really sort of work on them. But, I don't know. I'm babbling. I got nothing. How about you?
This week in Sweden, it's starting to turn to spring starting. So there's still snow, but it's melting. So you get these like puddles and lakes and little streams turned to little rivers. And JJ loves the water. So a lot of splashing around. So he's loving it. Stopped eating the drywall. So that's good. What else?
Oh, that's great.
That's really good. And
how did he stop? He just figured it out.
I think he ate everything that was available, and so he's run out. No, I'm just joking. I think he's starting to figure. I think, more than anything, is he gets curious about how things work, and so he starts to like pull the tape up. You know, if you just lay drywall, there's tape between two pieces of drywall that holds it together, and then I think he just tests it. I don't think he specifically is out trying to eat drywall. I think he's more testing it, but we're guessing again because. Nonverbal, which is one of the challenges that people in the spectrum sometimes deal with.
Well, both of our loved ones are men. Yours is a young man, 19, and like I said, my brother's 33. So this podcast has been heavily slanted towards our experiences with. Men who have autism,
yes,
males, boys, and what that's like. And, you know, we haven't always done a great job of talking about the female experience on the spectrum. We've had my mom on to talk about it. We've had Temple Grandin, Jill Escher, a roving reporter, interviewed just Temple Grandin, who is, of course, a woman with autism, but not enough. Now, granted, it is a 4-to-1 ratio.
At least. Yeah, depends on how you count. They used to think it was even higher, yeah.
Sure, of boys to girls, approximately, with autism. So we're a little bit off the hook. But let's take, we had Jill Escher as a resource, and we had a really nice interview with her, didn't we? We're about to play it, right?
I thought it was great. She likes to bring the caveat that, like, this is just my personal experience, but that's why I wanted to have her. She literally has two kids in her house with autism. One's a boy, one's a girl. Great. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And she knows exactly, you know, she knows the differences. Who better to talk to?
I agree.
So, this is our interview with Jill Escher.
Let's roll it. Hey guys, as promised, we have our roving reporter in studio apartment, kind of. We're calling in from all corners of the earth. She is calling in from San Francisco, the very talented and knowledgeable Jill Escher. Jill, thanks so much for doing our podcast.
Hey, Kirk. Hey, Graham.
Hi.
Well, we thought it would be interesting. As longtime listeners know, Jill is deeply involved in the autism community and additionally has two children on the spectrum of opposite sex. She has a girl and a boy with autism, and we just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the differences. Jill, tell us a little bit about your kids.
Well, I think, is this your 133rd podcast, Kirk?
Well, because of the way technology works, I think we have one in the can that we haven't released yet. I think this is going to be 134.
Okay, so 134 podcasts, and we're finally talking about a girl with autism. So, you know,
we have talked
it's
about
not a bad ratio. It's a start.
We have talked about girls with autism before.
We did have Temple Grandin. Remember, you interviewed her.
Okay, that's true.
Try to call us out in our podcast. go ahead. Sorry.
Yes, I have two kiddos with autism. My son is 19, Kirk, kind of like yours.
Yes.
And my daughter is turning 12 this month, and her name is Sophie.
Both of them are. Oh, sorry, I was just saying, you and I FaceTimed, and I saw a grown man eating cereal walking around without a shirt on, a hairy chest. That looked very, very familiar. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, right. Yes, my large, hairy son walking around with minimum clothes. That's him. So, so I have this lovely daughter, and, you know, we had our son, and obviously had been diagnosed with autism. But then when I got pregnant again, neither of us thought it was remotely possible to have another child with autism. And then we found out it was a girl, and we thought, oh, well, for sure, there's no way that we're going to have another child with autism because, you know, so few girls have autism. Well, by the time she hit about 18 months, she had been missing all of those developmental milestones we know so well. So she wasn't pointing. She wasn't sharing and showing. She wasn't talking. She wasn't responding to her name. She wasn't playing with toys in a kind of normal symbolic way. She wasn't interested in, you know, making friends or imitating, you know, gestures or anything like that. So we took her in. I thought, well, there's no way. It's autism. You know, it's amazing how we can stay in denial till, like, you know, till there's no other option. But we had a couple of clinicians evaluate her, and they're like, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but we already had one kid with autism, and they really meant it. They were so sorry. And I almost couldn't believe it. Well, I really couldn't believe it. I mean, it was hard enough having one kid like this. To have two just seemed overwhelming and like something I could not possibly survive. But there she is, and she's now 12, and we have survived.
Now, this is a super obvious intro question, and then Graham, you take the next one. Sorry, but this just jumps out at me. What is the biggest difference? Like, there's got to be remarkable differences between the two, or is it not? Or is it exactly the same? The potty training's the same. Everything's the same. Or what's the biggest difference?
Well, I can only speak really to my own two kids. I don't think I can paint this with a broad brush. Like, girls are always different from boys.
Well, of course, of course.
But yeah, but in my case, so I would put my son closer to the JJ end of the spectrum.
Okay.
I think that if they were living together, they would get along great. They would understand each other. They're very similar in terms of how they function and communicate. Now,
I see a buddy cop movie in the making.
Yeah.
Shirtless. Of course, shirtless. You got to give the ladies what they want. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sophie is a little bit more towards, I wouldn't say she's not high functioning at all, but she's nonverbal, but she's what I call more portable. She's a lot calmer, fewer behaviors. She's not remotely as destructive. My son is, as we call him, the Tasmanian devil of destruction. And he loves fiddling with things to the point where they no longer work. But my, to put it mildly, did you mention something about a computer keyboard, Kirk?
Yeah, he destroyed it again. We have a history of him destroying computers, and we bought this indestructible one. They make a tough book from Toshiba that's indestructible that he started to destroy. But yeah.
Yeah. So my son, he has that gene. Yeah. He has that exact gene. My daughter doesn't, which makes her a lot easier on a day-to-day basis. So she's therefore, we call her more portable. I mean, I took her to a ballet over the weekend and she was able to sit through it, which is something I could never do with my son. Yeah, I took her skiing. She actually went skiing by herself down a mountain.
Wow.
Which was amazing. Yeah. I took her to Hawaii and she went swimming in the ocean and, was just easy as pie. So that's really the difference between them. Right. Functionally, they're very similar. Like if you were a clinician and you were trying to say like, what degree of functionality do they have? Well, they're both in a very low range, but she's easygoing and so sweet. She walks up to people now and just starts kissing them, which is kind of a problem. Yeah. She starts hugging and kissing complete strangers.
Yeah.
She gets away with it because she's so cute.
Little cute girl. She's
so cute.
When JJ tries to do that, people think he's trying to eat them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The cuteness pays off, man. Yeah. She never gets into trouble. Mm-mm.
Graham, go ahead. I've got more questions. But
Do you foresee that being a problem, like in a couple years, just when she starts becoming a young lady? Yeah.
My favorite topic, not.
Yeah.
Okay. So, just as with boys, these cute little kids turn into hairy, smelly adults, right?
Yeah.
You can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sophia's, of course, in that transition now as we speak, an almost 12-year-old. So we stand at the verge of the blossoming of her, shall we say, womanhood.
Sure.
And the situation is changing before our eyes, really every day. And it's exactly as you say, it becomes a little scarier and a little less cute when somebody who looks like almost a teenager starts doing these things. And I'm not there yet, right? She's still a little girl to me, but yeah, it is
totally
scary. It is scary. And when girls involve issues that aren't really present as much with boys. And I know these things that are not funny. And I realize this is a comedian's guide to autism, but there's
also a real guide to autism as well. There's truth in everything has to be truthful. So, let's talk about it.
Well, the truth is that you have worries with girls that you don't have with boys. And that is partly biological. So, girls do this thing called have periods. Girls
You hear that, Kirk?
Can get See, he never had sex then. He grew up in Ecuador. They don't have sex. So there's that. Girls can get pregnant and boys cannot. Was it last month? It was the month before I went to a conference and there was an entire presentation about birth control for girls with autism and other developmental disabilities. What a fantastic presentation and what an important topic. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is something I never had to worry about.
Of course.
You know, mm-hmm. with Johnny. And now here I am, you know, thinking about all these different options of what we might have to do with our daughter.
That kind of leads into my next question. So what are your thoughts on like dating and stuff? If she's more portable, she can go to the movies, she can travel, she can, does she, what are your thoughts on that as a mom? Like, is that something that freaks you out? Or are you like hopeful that she'll find somebody someday, or how does that work?
Well, certainly there are lots and lots of women with autism who have sufficient communication and social relatedness to date. No doubt about that. Sophie, at least at this time, is nonverbal and really has never had a single friend in her life. And I cannot quite envision her doing something as complex as dating. But certainly there are lots and lots and lots of women on the spectrum who do date, and I think it's challenging for them. I think there's definitely research out there that shows that these girls are more vulnerable. You know, they don't really understand when somebody's trying to manipulate them or take advantage of them, and that can be really scary. They just sometimes don't have those cognitive tools to differentiate, you know, what's a real romantic overture and what's something, who's somebody that's just trying to take advantage of me because I'm vulnerable. And that's scary. That's scary.
Are there some positive things maybe that are easier about raising a daughter with autism over a son who has autism? Like, for example, are they less violent? Like, are they less, not that everyone who has autism is violent, but there is some people are prone to it. I know my brother had issues with that. I know Kirk's son had outbursts. And I'm just wondering if it's less of an issue with a person who's a woman or a girl.
Well, I can speak only to my family. I don't know if there's research on that particular topic, what they might call externalizing behaviors in the psychiatric literature. But I do think, you know, in my case, Sophie is as gentle as a lamb. She is just the sweetest, kindest, most adorable, smiliest little girl. And, you know, my son, on the other hand, unfortunately can be aggressive and can be quite destructive, as we talked about before. So, it makes her a lot easier. I can take her to family functions. I can't really take Johnny to family functions, right? Because you turn around and he's ripping up the couch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, like, that's not really appreciated. So, you know, you turn around and Sophie's not ripping up the couch, but she might be outside swinging on the swing by herself. You know,
she sounds really,
that's a big
really
difference.
Sweet.
Yeah, she does.
She sounds really what?
She sounds very sweet and very happy.
She is. She is sweet and happy, and we do our best to keep her that way. I mean, I was kind of camp mommy all the time with Sophie. Mm-hmm. So we're big ice skaters. So like you Canadians, we are major ice skaters. We skate all the time. We go hiking all the time. We go swimming all the time. I try to, you know, open up the world to her and include her in everything I possibly can. Because she enjoys life. She loves life. She loves doing things. And so she really is a joy. But on the other hand, she's incredibly impaired. I mean, again, she can't read. She can't write.
Right.
She can't talk. Right. She can't play. She can't hold a conversation. She can't text. She can't use a phone. I mean, all, you know, basic levels. She can't dress herself, although we're teaching her. It's a very funny thing. So every clinician who looked at Sophie, they're completely baffled by her because she's so well functioning on a certain level. And on the other hand, like, she is missing all the basic functional skills. Like, they find her a complete mystery.
Huh.
And now, is there a higher percentage of, we know that it's approximately a 4-to-1 ratio, boys to girls who have autism. Do most girls who, or females who have autism, do a lot of them, do they have a brother who has autism?
Really good question. You know, the research shows that if you have a daughter with autism, you are at a greater risk of having a second child with autism than if you have a boy with autism. So what does that mean? Why is that significant? Well, it might, and again, it's very speculative at this point. It's the 4-to-1 gender ratio or sex ratio in autism remains, for the most part, really, really mysterious. People don't really understand why that is. But one reason that is batted about quite a bit is they find that for a girl to get autism, she needs more genetic hits than a boy, right? So let's say you have twins, right? Let's say they have the same genetic hits. Well, the boy is more likely to exhibit the symptoms of autism than the girl. And that's called sometimes the female protective effect in the literature. Now, they don't really understand why that is. Like, is there some, what is it that makes girls more resilient, right, against these genetic hits? Is it something in the way the female brain is wired? Is it something hormonal? Is it some compensating mechanism in the genome? You know, nobody really knows at this point. But it's one of the most enduring findings in autism is this 4-to-1, and sometimes it's a 3-to-1 ratio. So something biologically is going on that we just don't fully understand.
Let me...
Go ahead,
Graham. Go ahead, buddy.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, this is unrelated, but you know, we have a lot of young parents who listen to the podcast, or parents with kids that are younger. Anything that you would, any advice you would give to a parent who is raising she has a 4-year-old daughter with autism, and anything that jumps out at you that you wish you had known going in, whether it's potty training, whether it's anything jump out at you?
You know, I'm going to say something that's so cliched.
What do you got?
And old.
That's probably a reason it's cliched.
Yeah. Use your own intuition about your child. You know, just because a child has the label of autism doesn't really tell you very much about your kid. You really have to look underneath that label. And these kids are very mysterious. It's hard to get to know them sometimes, but figure out what your daughter likes and really go with that. And again, this is a cliche. You hear this from Temple Grandin. You hear this from, you know, a bunch of autism experts. Use what motivates them.
Right.
And it requires quite a bit of trial and error to find, you know, what they do. But I'll give you some examples. I have lots and lots of friends who have daughters with autism. I have a friend whose daughter has high functioning autism, and she discovered her daughter loves to dance. Well, this mother created a dance class, a special needs dance class, around the needs of her daughter, but included dozens of other boys and girls. And now this girl is a teenager and is trying to figure out a way. Remember, she's verbal, she's higher functioning.
Right.
Find a way to parlay that into her own nonprofit for special needs dance.
Wow.
I mean, that's an exceptional example of a mom really finding something her daughter loved and capitalizing on it. You know, in other cases, I have a friend whose daughter loves to swim and she's in the Special Olympics. And I have another friend whose daughter enrolled in theater classes, even though she's nonverbal. But for some reason, she loved those classes and apparently got a lot out of it. I mean, I'm not the mother. I can't really say exactly what happened. But these are examples of parents just experimenting with different things and finding what worked. Now, the other thing that I saw happening around here is the isolation of the girls can be very, very acute.
Yeah.
A lot of them really want friends. Like, look, my daughter runs up to strangers and starts hugging and kissing them. I think that my daughter is actually a very social person. She just lacks the tools.
She doesn't know how to express it.
So a mom around here, she can't express it. A mom around here started an autism Girl Scout troop, right? And got together about 5 girls with various levels of autism, and they got together every week to do Girl Scout activities. These things are not written in the user manual of autism, right? You just have to find what clicks. And, you know, that's been hard. Finding social opportunities for my daughter has been extremely hard, but I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, keep trying. My brother had a lot of trouble, and he still has trouble, but he has found his little group and, And it took, he goes in and out of having some good friends here and there, but in the beginning it certainly was much harder than it is now. And I think, you know, he built up some skills as he got older.
Yeah. You know, it's, the social thing is you have to structure something for them, right? It's never going to happen naturally, never. So you have to create that safe place, right, where they can interact with somebody else. With girls, it's a little harder because there are so much fewer girls. It's harder to find them.
Right.
Harder to find the mom. Sophie's birthday is coming up, and we always throw her a backyard birthday party. And I have to say, every year, the ratio of autism is 4-to-1 male to female, because that's just how it is. It's almost scientific.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah. So anyway, but thank you for having me, gentlemen. I love your show, and congratulations on getting this far with it.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening and spreading the word and being a part of it. You're always a huge resource.
Yeah,
we appreciate it, and thank you for shedding some light on what it's like to be a parent of someone who is a girl with autism. We really do appreciate it. I'm sorry that we haven't had more talks about it, Jill. Jeez.
I was going to say, you're part of our success, Jill. Thank you so much for everything you do. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much. We appreciate it.
All right. I'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Have a great week. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, that was it. What do you think, Graham?
Awesome as always. Informative. She's by far the brightest person.
Between the three of us? Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it's great. And I hope you guys enjoyed it, too. As always, you can donate at patreon.com, patreon.com/autastic. As always, you can donate $1 per episode or $5 per episode. Both are greatly appreciated. Write some comments on iTunes. It helps with the algorithm. Give us a good rating. And you can find me at Mr. Graham K on Twitter and Instagram K on Instagram. And of course, my website is Graham K. ComedyByTheGraham.com. I almost had it, Kirk, didn't I? I was on a roll, buddy.
A long time listener.
Comedy by the Graham.
No, I'm laughing.
Comedy by the Graham. Yeah. ComedyByTheGraham.com is my website for showtimes, etc.
If you're listening to these podcasts in reverse order, like you're listening to the newest first and then the oldest, don't listen to any of the old social media tags that he's giving you in episode 30 or 10 or 60 or 80. Listen to the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen. You can check mine out at Kirk Smith Comedy on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Add us, of course, on Facebook and Instagram. It means a lot to us if you would share this podcast, tag a friend. And that's how we, mostly word of mouth is how we're building this thing. So we appreciate it. If you like what you hear and you think somebody would enjoy this, spread the word.
Yep. Thank you.
Guys, have a great week. You can do it.